Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Today, we're going to be talking about a Christian perspective on understanding video games and some of the more recent concerns about the effects of video games and that entire digital entertainment industry on young people. Of course, we're not just talking young people anymore. This also has to do with some adults who are playing these games. But Stephen Moore of the Wall Street Journal has written a fascinating article about how his two teenage sons, he says, turned into zombies by using these games. He's going to be our guest today, Stephen Moore of the Wall Street Journal, up in just a few moments. You can join the conversation by calling 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We'll look forward to that discussion in just a moment. First, to review some issues in the news on my website at albertmohler.com. Last night, early this morning, I posted an article entitled Theology Matters, It Always Matters. And it really has to do with what we talked about yesterday with our guest, George Weigel, talking about how the theology of Islam and the theology of Christianity in particular produce very different civilizations, and how if we're going to understand the war on terror and all the rest, we've got to understand it in terms of a basic conflict, not just to the level of policies and philosophy and sociology and economics, but at the level of theology. Because at the end of the day, our most significant understandings of reason, rationality, morality, and all the rest come down to our understandings of God and what it means to know this God and what this God expects of us. You'll find that article at albertmohler.com and links to other materials there as well. Also, I published this morning an article entitled Portrait of the Tyrant as a Young Man. At the feature of my website known as The Reading List, where I make recommendations for reading, I have recommended this biography of the young Joseph Stalin, Simon Sebag, Montefiore, who is a very, very competent historian. He's written already one major work on Stalin entitled Stalin, the Court of the Red Tsar. He has written a major work, massive, large work, but also a fascinating and compelling to read work about the missing years of Stalin's early life. Here's some things you probably don't know. As a matter of fact, when you're looking at Joseph Stalin as one of the architects of tyranny and murder on a massive scale in the 20th century, a lot of people don't realize that he was a choir boy. In fact, his name was Soso. As a boy, he was the lead chorister in a Russian Orthodox seminary where he was training to be a priest. He lost his faith as a very young man. And one of the interesting things that Montefiore documents in this book is that a part of losing his faith had to do with his reading of Charles Darwin's book, The Origin of the Species. And so when you start thinking about the fact that ideas have consequences, just work backwards from Stalin, estimated to have murdered approximately 20 to 25 million persons within his own country, not to count all that went on in his name, and through the influence of the Soviet Union around the world, it is interesting to track that back to how he lost his faith, and by that we mean his cognitive commitment to Christianity, not his regenerate understanding, because this is a man who proved that he was not a regenerate believer in the Lord Jesus Christ, but rather he was a communicant in the Russian Orthodox Church, and he left all that behind, joining the atheistic movement of the world communist, Comintern, and everything that went on. He became a close associate of Lenin. As a matter of fact, as a very young man, it was he who saved Lenin's life. And he became a co-conspirator in the 1917 Russian Revolution. It's just interesting to track all this back, and it is especially haunting, I think, for us to remember that these tyrants had childhoods. These tyrants were also teenagers, adolescents, and young adults. And when you think about the influences that were absent from Joseph Stalin's life, you can see something of the pathology that would produce this murderous tyrant. I want to read to you how Simon Sebag Montefiore ends this work on Joseph Stalin. He says this, Soso, that's returning to the word, the name, by which he was known as a little boy. He says, Soso was old, sclerotic, and forgetful, yet until his death, age 74, on the 5th of March, 1953, the aging choir boy remained the peerless politician, paranoid megalomaniac, and aberrant master of human misery on a scale only paralleled by Hitlerite Germany. Responsible for the deaths of around 20 to 25 million people, Stalin imagined he was a political, military, scientific, and literary genius, a people's monarch, a red czar. incredible power of self-delusion that led to murder on a massive scale. You'll find that article also at albertmohler.com. If you're in Chicago, perhaps you are familiar with a controversy that is broiling there, having to do with the fact that there is a 14-year-old atheist who is causing no end of controversy by demanding that her school and school system be accommodated to her atheism. The young girl's name is Dawn Sherman. She is 14. Nara Schoenberg of the Chicago Tribune introduces her report this way. The number two atheist activist in Illinois doesn't have an office or a car. Reporters have been banned from her home. Her mother is adamant on this point, so the McDonald's across the street from Buffalo Grove High School has to serve as her impromptu media headquarters. None of which is surprising when you consider that Dawn Sherman is all of 14. Her lawsuit challenging the new Silent Reflection and Student Prayer Act in Illinois has already resulted in a temporary injunction blocking the law's mandatory moment of silence for the 13,000 students in Township High School District 214. Now she and the number one atheist activist in Illinois, her father, Rob, are going after a bigger prize. They want the law struck down as unconstitutional. Now, if you're in Illinois, you're aware that this law was recently adopted by the state legislature, signed by the governor, and was to go into effect. This injunction means that only in this one school system is it on hold by a court injunction. Nonetheless, the challenge offered by the Shermans goes all the way to the constitutionality of the law itself. Now, there are some interesting things in here, and I want to refer to one specific part of this article because I think it's very revealing. It mentions that Dawn has been, from her very earliest ages, one who identified with her father's atheism. And just to point out how that works, let me read to you from the article. It says, the younger of two children of Rob, that's the father, who's a very prominent atheist, and his wife Celeste, Dawn was exposed to her father's beliefs at an early age. She jokes that when she was still a fetus, her father would whisper to her mother's belly, God is make-believe, God is make-believe, and Daddy is perfect. Now she's echoing the same line. By the second grade, Dawn was refusing to stand for the words under God and the Pledge of Allegiance. By the fifth grade, she and her father persuaded a school choral group to stop singing a Jewish prayer. And at one point, she supposedly got God banned from homecoming at her school. And it was because some part of the program was to include the singing of the song God Bless America. It was to be played in the hallways during homecoming week. She said, quote, if you want to listen to God Bless America, you can download it onto your iPod and listen to it in the middle of class. You can't force me to listen to it because it's not secular. It's not what I believe. So I would appreciate it if you took it off the list. Thank you. The song was stricken from the playlist, a move that allowed the father to boast to the local newspaper that his daughter, quote, got God banned from homecoming. Now listen to this. This is what's interesting. This is the father of this girl speaking. He says, oh, did that get a reaction out of the community? They were ticked. And it says here the father said this gleefully. Now, that's what's really interesting. It makes you wonder what's behind a lot of this. This atheistic allergy to any reference to God whatsoever, you have to wonder how honest this is. Whether it's from a 14-year-old or from her 54-year-old father, you just have to wonder how honest this is. And let me tell you another piece of evidence in this article, which makes me wonder just how honest this is. This is a girl who is boasting that she got the song God Bless America banned from the hallways of the school. But now listen to this. This is from the same news article. Listen, it says that Dawn sings religious music in the Grace Episcopal Choir. She loves the music, she says, and the words don't bother her because she doesn't attach much meaning to them. Her father says that singing in a church wouldn't be his choice, but he doesn't stand in his daughter's way. In other words, this is a girl who successfully protested about God Bless America being sung in part of the high school homecoming, but then she sings in the Episcopal Church choir words that are far more explicitly Christian. She says, and I quote again, the words don't bother her because she doesn't attach much meaning to them, end quote. Isn't it interesting that she's, you talk about hypocrisy, or let's give her the credit, she's a 14-year-old girl, perhaps confusion. I think worse probably of her father, who is gleefully bragging about all this. But you look at this, and you have a girl who is supposedly so traumatized by hearing God Bless America that it interferes with her entire psyche and academic program. But she will sing songs that are far more explicit. I mean, God Bless America is not making a great theological statement. It is not a Christological piece of music. It's not distinctively Christian in any way. But she sings in a Christian church choir, but she says the words don't bother her much because she doesn't attach much meaning to them. Well, at least there's an honest admission there, if awkward and sideways and perhaps inadvertent, that the words really aren't what is bothering her. there's something else. Well, I'll let that story stand for itself. We're going to turn to talk about video games and their impact on young people. Stephen Moore is going to be with us to talk about how his two teenage sons had their video game taken away because he saw his sons turning into teenage zombies. He's got a sense of humor writing about it, but he's got a very serious point as well. The big question for us is how we as Christians should think about the place of something like this in our lives. Good, bad, indifferent, pernicious, poisonous, entertaining, harmless. Let's talk about it on the Albert Mueller Program. The phone number 877-893-8255. Back with your discussion in just a moment.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 877-8-GOLD-101.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. We're all trying to figure out how to handle some of these new technologies, including new media. And when it comes to young people, one of the new media that is really getting a lot of their attention is, of course, the video game. If you're a parent, especially if you're the parent of teenagers, and especially if you're the parent of teenage boys, you are seeing this phenomenon. Stephen Moore, The Wall Street Journal, wrote about it just a few days ago in the column that he writes for the paper. He entitled it Teenage Zombies, and he writes in this article this lead. My New Year's resolution is to get my two teenage sons back. They've been abducted by the cult of Nintendo. I'm convinced that video games are Japan's stealth strategy to turn our kids' brains into silly putty as payback for dropping the big one on Hiroshima. Stephen Moore, welcome to the Albert Mueller Program.
Hi, Albert. How are you?
I'm doing great. Listen, I'm delighted in your article, and I've really enjoyed as a father some of the previous things that you have written about your family and your sons, and I don't want to miss your column in the Wall Street Journal. I imagine you've gotten some feedback from this one.
You know, it's amazing how much I have, and the story here is that I do have two teenage boys who, you know, their whole life have been good kids. They've been athletic, involved in sports, you know, very outgoing, and, you know, a year or two ago, they really got part of into this video game culture, and I'm really talking about these games you get off the computer, and World of Warcraft, I think one of them is called, and then they play Counter-Strike, and now they've become total addicts, Albert, and it's something they want to do in every waking unsupervised hour is play these games, and it's really become a problem for our family, and it's become, I've just gotten notes from hundreds of parents who say their kids are similarly addicted.
You know, I'm going to admit, when I saw your article, I thought at first you were writing entirely tongue-in-cheek, and what a great lead, by the way. And then following through the article, I discovered, no, you're really not writing merely tongue-in-cheek. There's some of that.
It's funny you mention that because, you know, I do try to write with humor. But this is, it is, and there are some humorous points in the story, but it's a serious subject. I mean, it is a serious problem with today's youth. And, you know, one of the reasons I wrote the article was to warn parents who might have, you know, kids in middle school or that aren't teenagers yet to not let your kids get addicted to these games because it's very difficult. When we tried to take the computer away from the kids, they acted like addicts. They acted like they had withdrawal symptoms. They started ranting and raving and throwing things and, you know, just not cooperating at all. And we found that it's been just really bad for their behavior, bad for their personalities. And it's almost like their life becomes this imaginary life on the computer, not the real life of that a teenager should live.
Now, Mr. Moore, you cite some interesting studies in your article. You mention a study by the AMA, that's the American Medical Association, in which they found that many kids who spend a disproportionate amount of time playing these games, and I'm reading the quote here, achieve more control and success of their social relationships in the virtual reality realm than in real relationships. You mentioned the addictive behavior. I've had other guests on this program who have talked about the physiological impact of some of this, especially in teenage boys. You have endorphins, serotonin actually released in the brain, pleasure centers of the brain. It's not an illusion that this looks addictive. It can become even almost chemically addictive in terms of the brain, much like also many young males get trapped in a pattern of pornography because it's the same kind of hormone release in the brain. And it's because, evidently, young males in particular, teenage, adolescent, and young adults have an incredible ability to concentrate their brains on things they find fascinating and lock the rest of the world out. Is that part of what you were saying?
Well, you know, that's an interesting theory. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a psychologist. But some of the studies that I looked at did suggest that kids have addictive, they engage in addictive behavior. And look, I don't think that video games are necessarily evil. I don't think computer games are. But I do warn parents, you know, have time limits. Don't allow them to play the games, you know, for hours on end. Maybe make sure that the games aren't especially violent. And the one interesting thing that's going on in this area is there's the new games that are the Nintendo Wii games, which are more motion-directed. And I have friends who say that they do the boxing or the skiing or the snowboarding, and they actually get a pretty good workout on it. I've never tried it, but at least that seems like an improvement than the kids just sitting there, you know, using their fingers to do all of their activities.
I do think it's very important that you clarify what you did there. You're not saying the video games should be made illegal. I love the way you say the last thing we need is a black market in video games so people are addicted to them. You know, have your pusher pushing digital, you know, programs down on the street corner. But on the other hand, you are calling for parents to set limits. And I know you found this difficult, but nonetheless necessary.
Yeah, it was difficult because we let our kids become addicted. And you know, our story is one of where my wife and I really didn't realize how bad it had gotten until we tried to take it away and to set these limits. And part of the problem is that our kids, you know, are very, as most teenage boys and even girls now, they're very computer literate. You know, my sons know how to navigate around the computer much better than I do. And so when every time we tried to use the parental controls, the kids found ways around them.
Now, you also, in addition to these two teenage boys, you have other children, and you're trying to kind of head them off, if I read your article right.
No, and the problem is, you know, we have two older boys and then we have a six-year-old, but the six-year-old imitates everything the older boys do. And so he's starting to learn how to play these games too, and we're keeping him away. And he says we're the meanest parents for doing this. But, you know, the point I'm really trying to make in the article, though, is parents, be very vigilant. Make sure your kids are doing things that are healthy. They should be out playing sports. They should be out, you know, playing with their friends and doing their homework. And they shouldn't spend every waking hour in front of the computer playing games that in my opinion, really do turn their minds into silly putty and allow their muscles to atrophy.
You know, I get to see so many young people, work with so many young people. I know exactly what you're talking about. I think there are a lot of Americans who may be fairly unaware of this. By the way, one little footnote here. The Wii system is a big hit among the elderly right now.
Yes, yep.
And so that's an amazing new trend on this. I really appreciate it.
You play Wii games, yeah. Albert?
Do I?
Yeah.
No, I never have.
I never have either. I'm kind of eager to see how they work, but I'm afraid I'm going to get addicted too. So.
Well, listen, we missed it while we were teenagers. Maybe it'll hit us when we're senior citizens. But
you know, I had a line in the piece where I said, at least I thought, you know, now that the kids are 10 and turning 15 and 16, they might get more interested in real-life girls, but... You know, their interest right now is still the computers, not the pretty girls in their high school.
You mentioned a couple of interesting very things here. You mentioned, I'm going to read here from your article, a parent down the street confided to us that his 12-year-old son was so obsessed with video games that he wouldn't take even a three-minute break from gaming to go to the bathroom. And then you just say, M-dash, with unfortunate results.
Yeah, that's a true story. I mean, that's an indication, Albert, of how truly addicted kids get to this when they won't even pry themselves away you know, from the game to take a bathroom break. Or now my kids, they demand, and we haven't given in on this, they want to eat their meals in front of the computer.
Oh, my heavens. Well, that is just another sign of exactly what you document here, and that is that some of these teenagers are having more, you say, control and success, as you quote the AMA, but perhaps even fulfillment in some ways, just given their limited horizon of the immediate present. In virtual reality rather than in real relationships. Stephen Moore is with the Wall Street Journal, and I really admire this article. But also, Mr. Moore, I just want to tell you, I admire you for, as a father and with your wife as parents, taking control here. Thanks for joining us
today. We've got to take more control. Thanks so much.
All right, folks, to join the conversation, call 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. This is not just a conversation about the horror stories that can happen with video games and kids. We've talked about content, violence, pornography, and all the other aspects. We're talking here about what it means as parents to take control. Give me a call. We'll be right back. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. To join the conversation, call 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. I'd especially like to hear from parents. What kind of parameters are you setting? How are you thinking about this? Is there a distinctively Christian angle to this? I'm going to suggest that there is. I want you to think this through with me. We as Christians are responsible for understanding all things through the rubric of Scripture. And one of the things the Scripture makes clear is that reality is a really important concept. And what we should be concerned about is when anyone, but especially when a Christian, or within a Christian home, a virtual reality would become more important than reality. And, for instance, relationships online, or the dynamic online, or the narrative or the game being played out online, becomes more important than the real relationships and real actions of real people in the real world. And we know how illusory this kind of thing can be. We know how seductive this kind of thing can be. I mean, there isn't a pastor in America who probably hasn't had to deal with a marriage that has been broken up or irreparably harmed by the fact that one of the spouses has been involved in a virtual relationship online. The whole idea of a virtual world, this second world, if we're going to call it, is very problematic. You know, there are lawsuits now over second world issues. There are real estate transactions in second world with real world money. Something very strange is going on here. And I think it's just really, really important that we as Christians understand that if our children, ourselves, of course, but if our children are really beginning to identify with the things online and a virtual reality far more than the things around them, we have a problem. Stephen Moore, I thought one comment he made in passing was really interesting, that his boys got to the point where they wanted to have their meals in front of the computer. That's a sign of the kind of social withdrawal from the family, which, to quote Churchill, is the kind of thing up with which we must not put. And that's a pretty scary thing. What are you doing about this? The phone number, 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. And everyone in the world is free to call this program except my own 15-year-old son, who also, Christopher, enjoys playing video games, has some very significant parameters set there as well. It is interesting. This isn't just something that's isolated. It's not just something that's remote and abstract. This is something that all of us are having to deal with, just in terms of the challenge of parenting in this digital age and handling our kids who are playing these games in a virtual world. Very interesting that even Microsoft has some concerns about this. Microsoft and the National PTA have come up with the acronym PACT, or PACT, to recommend to parents, suggesting that parents should be very much concerned with the four things represented by these four letters, P-A-C-T, PACT. P stands for parental involvement. The A is for determining what your child can access. The word access is very important here. Whether it's online gaming or video games, whatever the system or technology, parents must control access. And if you're not controlling access, then your kids are basically alone and unarmed in the wild, wild west of the virtual world. The C stands for content. Be very concerned with the content of what they're doing online, the storyline, you know, the games that Stephen Moore mentioned that his boys are playing. They all have a narrative. They all have a storyline. There is content. And then the T stands for time. How long can the kids play these games? How many hours in a week, in a day, can be devoted to this? Because without limits, this is seemingly a very addictive behavior. The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Give me a call and let me know what you're thinking about this. Let me tell you, I think the very picture that Stephen Moore mentions in this article about a 12-year-old boy who is so addicted to the games that he doesn't even get up to go to the bathroom with what he characterizes as unfortunate results. You know, frankly, a 12-year-old boy is not inclined to allow those unfortunate results unless something is so compelling to him that he just can't break away from it. Now, I want to ask you this. If you know a 12-year-old boy, ever were a 12-year-old boy, how exciting does something have to be for you to be so obsessed you won't get up to even go to the bathroom and you soil yourself? You know, I don't think there's an athletic game that I could envision that a 12-year-old wouldn't leave if he's got to go to the bathroom. I can't think of any book he wouldn't put down. I can't think of any conversation he wouldn't interrupt, at least at some point, to say, I got to go to the bathroom. But when you're talking about some of these video games, They just can't break away. We've got calls coming in from across the country. You can join the conversation by calling 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I think it is important for Christian parents to think this through, and by the way, for Christian churches, to encourage Christian parents together to talk about these things, especially the parents of older children and teenagers. I will tell you, however, that as a seminary and college president, the patterns set on these things in adolescence continue into young adulthood and can be quite a temptation at ages far beyond the teens. Back with your calls in just a moment. Coast to coast and with listeners around the world, this is the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 877-8-GOLD-101.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. To join the conversation, call 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I had a call from a mom who said that this is affecting her ability to communicate with her children. Hard to talk with them when they are so fascinated and captivated by these games. You know, sometimes parents, I think what you have to do is actually not just take the joystick out of the hand. You need to reach behind the machine and pull the plug because they don't work without electricity. Little hint that might come in helpful. Revel's calling from Louisville, Kentucky, listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Revel.
Hi, Dr. Mueller. Yeah, I see a lot of people that I deal with in my business that it's seemingly that there's just a constant abuse of this from senses that you see kids with ADHD and all like this, and that I know with a lot of kids that I deal with that it's just they're mesmerized by it, and you can't get them to get away from it long enough to do homework, and when they do, they want to shorten their homework to get back into playing on the games.
Now, do you have this the challenge in your own home with your own kids, or is this something you observe
in my own home and also in my private practice that I have?
Now, let me ask you, Revel, if I might, just to kind of play that out just a little bit. Are these kids that would rather play the game inside than ever go outside? I mean, I hear that from parents continually now.
Yeah, you know, they don't want to eat. They don't, like somebody said earlier, that they don't even want to take a break to go to the bathroom. You find out that outdoor sports, indoor sports even, is difficult. I know with some of the challenges I have with children is that they want to quit playing organized sports in order to have time set aside to play with the games. It's a tremendous challenge that parents are having that I see, along with myself.
I really appreciate your call, Revel. You know, I have to say, in listening to you talk, I wonder how many parents really blind themselves to this because it does keep the kids busy. You know, and I think there are probably some parents thinking, hey, they're safe, they're where I can see them, they're not outside, they're not in the streets, they're not in a place where they can get hurt, they're not playing around with kids out there that, you know, I just am not sure about. Well, number one, a lot of these online games mean they are playing with someone. There are other people involved, and one of the sad things about some of these online games is that parents may be completely unaware that they've got a 13-year-old boy who's playing with, you know, an older person, you know, perhaps involved in these games in ways that that you wouldn't even understand and might not be aware of. I think the other thing going on here is that an awful lot of these kids are really getting so much fulfillment out of this, perhaps in their obsession with this, that parents aren't even aware that these kids are negotiating away other parts of their lives, relationships, activities, hobbies, homework from here to there. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I think this list of concerns that Microsoft has helped to develop really is a pretty good outline, PACT, and that is, first of all, parental involvement. Second, has to do with access. The A is for access. And access is really, really important. I mean, one of the things we as parents must do is take responsibility to limit the access of our children to all these forms of digital media, not just video games. But I go over this time and time again. We as Christian parents have a responsibility to limit the access of our children to much of the World Wide Web. and what's available on the internet, because it is an unrestricted world. It's like a world without borders and a world without rules. And it's a very dangerous place. Not just dangerous in terms of the things you might think of. Certainly it's dangerous in terms of predatory behavior. It's dangerous in terms of pornography. But it's dangerous in terms of worldviews as well. Who knows, you know, what your child might be reading, your teenager might be experiencing on the web in ways that you don't even know. You know, it's one thing if you're structuring this engagement in order to have a conversation with your child, in order to guide that conversation, in order to help your child to develop discernment and spiritual maturity. It's another thing if the child's out there on his or her own. And, you know, a lot of parents find out about these things too late. The C, of course, is for content. It's not only access, it's content. And when it comes to a lot of these video games, you've got to be able to measure and know what that content is. And T is time. And I think anyone involved in this will tell you that that's just as important as all the rest. Because the temptation is to give this time and more time the next time, and before long, the entire day. Let's go to Lindsay, listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Lindsay.
Yes, I'm a middle school teacher, and I found when the kids came back from Christmas break, they could sing all the songs on their video games and things like that, but they couldn't remember a thing that we talked about before break. And I can just see how much it influences them culturally and spiritually even to be learning the different things that these video games have to teach. And they take it so seriously. They're competing with each other for who beat it the best or something like that. And I can just see how that pulls them in and just the satisfaction they can get just in winning a game or something.
Lindsay, let me ask you a question. When you're dealing as a middle school teacher here, actually a couple questions I'd like to ask you. The first question, do you see much of a distinction between girls and boys, or is it growing more and more the same?
Mostly in my experience, it's with the boys. There are girls now, especially with, I know the Wii games were mentioned, the more active ones, with the music and the dancing and stuff like that. The girls are more involved with that kind of thing. But overall, it seems like the boys are the ones who are the most involved with it.
Now, the other question I've got to ask you is, as a teacher, do you think the parents have a clue of what's going on here?
I think some of it is a slow realization. I've talked with some parents who were thinking of it like, oh, well, they enjoy music, so we'll get them this game. And then they hear their son or daughter singing a song that they wouldn't have ever let them listen to. And they know all the words because the words come up on the screen and they sing along. And it's kind of a late realization as to what was going on.
Lindsay,
they think it's an innocent, easy game or something like that, and then they find out, well, maybe we shouldn't have exposed them to this.
I really do appreciate your call, Lindsay, and I appreciate your perception, too, as a middle school teacher. I'm thankful you're there for those students. I think this is a challenge for all of us. By the way, as Lindsay was mentioning, some of these games that involve music, one of the most popular is entitled Guitar Hero, and there was an article in the Wall Street Journal indicating that some children have been so addicted to playing that game, they've given themselves so much to it that they haven't stopped during thunderstorms. And at least two or three of them have been struck by lightning as they played these games. None of them seriously injured, but as one 15-year-old boy said, I got the shock of my life, and the computer doesn't work anymore either. Back with final thoughts in just a moment. This is the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Looking back at the 20th century, there is no doubt that it was a century of remarkable firsts. The first flight, the development of the automobiles, modern transportation, the first man to set his foot on the moon, the first to reach the poles, and of course the first also to reach the summit of Mount Everest. In this case, it is interesting to note that Sir Edmund Hillary, who was the very first to stand atop Mount Everest, died yesterday at age 88. It was in 1953 that Hillary, along with Tenzing Norgay, a Sherpa guide, reached the top of Mount Everest. They've been followed by several people since. It's become something of a small industry in terms of people climbing Mount Everest. But nonetheless, it's important for us to remember that it was barely a half century ago that human beings first reached that remarkable summit of the world's highest mountain. And it's another reminder to us that human achievement is something that we all find exhilarating. When we see something like this, experiencing something like this, even look back and read the history of something like this, we recognize that that kind of extreme human achievement catches our attention, made the headlines across the world, got him knighted by the Queen. As a matter of fact, it made the name of Sir Edmund Hillary one of the most famous in the world. And even as he died at age 88 yesterday, he is remembered and made famous all over again as people were recounting his incredible deeds. When you start adding all of this up and you start looking at the who's who's and you start looking at all the world's records and you start looking at the history books and you look at the back of the index and you look up the great names, and you'll find names we all recognize. I think we as Christians need to take pause for a moment and recognize that there is something there in terms of these human achievements, something to celebrate, something to reflect upon. But I think it's also important for us to realize that when we get to heaven, in God's glory and eternity, it's going to be a very different set of names. The kind of hallmarks of fame and recognition that will be admirable in the kingdom of God throughout eternity are very different than those things here. I'm not discounting what it means to be the first to climb Mount Everest, to be the first to fly a plane across the Atlantic Ocean, to be the very first to do anything like that, to set foot on the moon or another human achievement. Those things are remarkable. But when this world passes away, those will not be the things that are most admired. I just want to encourage you out there, those of us who are involved in everyday life, mothers faithfully taking care of children, husbands being faithful to their wives, pastors faithfully teaching the word, missionaries faithfully taking the gospel to the ends of the earth, young people faithfully standing against the tide of the age, people doing what God has called us to do and doing it faithfully and humbly before God. In the end, those are the true heroes. In the end, Jesus Christ is the only true hero. It's important for us to reflect on this even as we reflect on the reality of great human achievements. We'll be back next week for Intelligent Christian Conversation. This is the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmueller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmueller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.